Okay, the next sutta, we're talking about commitment to training, and this next sutta is the Savasava Sutta, which is Majjhima 2. It's titled All the Taints. And in terms of dealing with those major underlying defilements within consciousness, there's these different range of approaches for dealing with them, and it's helpful to recognize that, you know, that some things need to be dealt with in different ways, and how to increase one's skill in reflecting, investigating, so that am I dealing with this in the right way? Is there another way that I could be dealing with it? Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, I shall teach you a discourse on the restraint of all the taints." So taints is what Bhikkhu Bodhi uses for asava. Taints, cankers, effluence, something else. Outflows, yes, outflows. So there's this range of taint of sensuality, taint of becoming, and the taint of ignorance. Kamasava, bhavasava, avijhasava are the three, and then in the later commentaries, very quickly actually, like in Patisamvita Magga, then they started to include ditti as one of the asavas views, the dittasava. Seems the human condition is so able to get into views very quickly. So, "Bhikkhus, I say that the destruction of the taints is for one who knows and sees, not for one who does not know and see. Who knows and sees what? Wise attention and unwise attention. Yoniso manasikara, yoniso manasikara. Wise attention, wise consideration, skillful reflection, attending to things skillfully. When one attends unwisely, unarisen taints arise and arisen taints increase. When one attends wisely, unarisen taints do not arise and arisen taints are abandoned. Because there are taints that should be abandoned by seeing. There are taints that should be abandoned by restraining. There are taints that should be abandoned by using. There are taints that should be abandoned by enduring. There are taints that should be abandoned by avoiding. There are taints that should be abandoned by removing. There are taints that should be abandoned by developing. What taints, bhikkhus, should be abandoned by seeing?" Should be keeping an eye on the footnotes here. So seeing is dasana, and it refers to the first of the four supreme mundane paths, the path of stream entry. Say it offers the first glimpse of Nibbana. "Here, bhikkhus, an untaught ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dhamma, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dhamma, does not understand what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Since that is so, he attends to those things unfit for attention, and he does not attend to those things fit for attention." Footnote says, the commentary makes the important point that there is no fixed determination in things themselves as to whether they are fit or unfit for attention. The distinction consists, rather, in the mode of attention. That mode of attention that is a causal basis for unwholesome states of mind should be avoided, while that mode of attention that is a causal basis for wholesome states to be developed. That should be there. Okay. What are things unfit for attention that he attends to? They are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen taint of sensual desire arises in him, and the arisen taint of sensual desire increases. The unarisen taint of being arises in him, and the arisen taint of being increases. The unarisen taint of ignorance arises in him, and the arisen taint of ignorance increases. These are the things unfit for attention that he attends to. And what are the things fit for attention that he does not attend to? They are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen taint of sensual desire does not arise in him, and the arisen taint of sensual desire is abandoned. The unarisen taint of being does not arise in him, and the arisen taint of being is abandoned. The unarisen taint of ignorance does not arise in him, and the arisen taint of ignorance is abandoned. These are the things fit for attention that he does not attend to. By attending to things unfit for attention and by not attending to things fit for attention, both unarisen taints arise in him and arisen taints increase. This is how he attends unwisely. Was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what shall I become in the future? Or else he is inwardly perplexed about the present thus. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where will it go? When he attends unwisely in this way, one of six views arises in him. The view, self exists for me, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, no self exists for me, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, I perceive self with self, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, I perceive not self with self, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, I perceive self with not self, arises in him as true and established. Or else he has some such view as this. It is this self of mine that speaks and feels and experiences here and there the result of good and bad actions. But this self of mine is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, and it will endure as long as eternity. This speculative view, bhikkhus, is called the thicket of views, the wilderness of views, the contortion of views, the vacillation of views, the fetter of views. Fettered by the fetter of views, the untaught ordinary person is not freed from birth, aging, and death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. He is not freed from suffering, I say. Bhikkhus, a well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, who has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, understands what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Since that is so, he does not attend to those things unfit for attention, and he attends to those things fit for attention. And it goes through that again. What are the things unfit for attention? And so on. What are the things fit for attention? Those the unarisen taints do not arise in him, and arisen taints are abandoned. He attends wisely. This is suffering. He attends wisely. This is the origin of suffering. He attends wisely. This is the cessation of suffering. He attends wisely. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. When he attends wisely in this way, three fetters are abandoned in him: personality view, doubt, and adherence to rules and observances. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by seeing. What taints, bhikkhus, should be abandoned by restraining? The footnote in this is, if abandonment of the taints is understood in the strict sense as their ultimate destruction, then only two of the seven methods mentioned in the sutta effect their abandonment, seeing and development, which between them comprise the four supramundane paths. The other five methods cannot directly accomplish the destruction of the taints, but they can keep them under control during the preparatory stages of practice and thereby facilitate their eventual eradication by the supramundane paths. Here, a bhikkhu reflecting wisely abides with the eye faculty restrained. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who abides with the eye faculty unrestrained, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who abides with the eye faculty restrained. Reflecting wisely, he abides with the ear faculty restrained, with the nose faculty restrained, with the tongue faculty restrained, with the body faculty restrained, with the mind faculty restrained. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who abides with the faculties unrestrained, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who abides with the faculties restrained. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by restraining. What taints bhikkhu should be abandoned by using? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, uses the robe only for protection from cold, for protection from heat, for protection from contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, the sun, and creeping things, and only for the purpose of concealing the private parts. Reflecting wisely, he uses alms food neither for amusement, nor for intoxication, nor for the sake of physical beauty and attractiveness, but only for the endurance and continuance of this body, for ending discomfort, and for assisting the holy life, considering, thus I shall terminate old feelings without arousing new feelings, and I shall be healthy and blameless, and shall live in comfort. Reflecting wisely, he uses the resting place only for protection from cold, for protection from heat, for protection from contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, the sun, and creeping things, and only for the purpose of warding off the perils of climate and for enjoying retreat. Reflecting wisely, he uses the medicinal requisites only for protection from arisen afflicting feelings and for the benefit of good health. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not use the requisites thus, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who uses them thus. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by using. Taints to be abandoned by enduring. What taints, bhikkhu, should be abandoned by enduring? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, bears cold and heat, hunger and thirst, and contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, the sun, and creeping things. He endures ill-spoken, unwelcome words and arisen bodily feelings that are painful, racking, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, distressing, and menacing to life. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not endure such things, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who endures them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by enduring. What taints, bhikkhu, should be abandoned by avoiding? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, avoids a wild elephant, a wild horse, a wild bull, a wild dog, a snake, a stump, a bramble patch, a chasm, a cliff, a cesspit, a sewer. Reflecting wisely, he avoids sitting on unsuitable seats, wandering to unsuitable resorts, and associating with bad friends. Since if he were to do so, wise companions in the holy life might suspect him of evil conduct. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not avoid these things, there are no taints, vexation, and fever in one who avoids them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by avoiding. What taints, bhikkhu, should be abandoned by removing? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, does not tolerate an arisen thought of sensual desire. He abandons it, removes it, does away with it, and annihilates it. He does not tolerate an arisen thought of ill will. He does not tolerate an arisen thought of cruelty. He does not tolerate arisen evil, unwholesome states. He abandons them, removes them, does away with them, annihilates them. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not remove these thoughts, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who removes them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by removing. What taints bhikkhus should be abandoned by developing? Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely develops the mindfulness enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the investigation of states enlightenment factor, the energy enlightenment factor, the rapture enlightenment factor, the tranquility enlightenment factor, the concentration element, enlightenment factor, the equanimity enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. While taints, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not develop these enlightenment factors, there are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who develops them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by developing. Bhikkhus, when for a bhikkhu the taints that should be abandoned by seeing have been abandoned by seeing, when the taints that should be abandoned by restraining have been abandoned by restraining, when the taints that should be abandoned by using have been abandoned by using, when the taints that should be abandoned by enduring have been abandoned by enduring, when the taints that should be abandoned by avoiding have been abandoned by avoiding, when the taints that should be abandoned by removing have been abandoned by removing, when the taints that should be abandoned by developing have been abandoned by developing, then he is called a bhikkhu who dwells restrained with the restraint of all the taints. He has severed craving, flung off the fetters, and with the complete penetration of conceit, he has made an end of suffering. This is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Any questions? developing. That's the last one, sort of the seeing, developing are the two main ones in terms of insight. The other ones are ones that are they all have understanding in the sense of the need to apply wise attention. Yoniso Manasikara also implies that certain element of understanding and seeing, even in terms of restraining and avoiding, there's the understanding that this is going to create problems, I better avoid it. This is not going to be for the arising of more wholesome states, I better avoid this. Okay, the next one is Majjhima 78, Sammana Mandika Putta Sutta. And this sort of follows on the theme of commitment to training. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. Now, on that occasion, the wanderer, Ugahamana Sammana Mandakaputta, was staying in Malika's park, the single-hulled Tinduka plantation, for philosophical debates, together with a large following of wanderers, with as many as 300 wanderers. The carpenter, Panchakanga, went out from Savatthi at midday in order to see the Blessed One. Then he thought, it is not the right time to see the Blessed One. He is still in retreat. And it is not the right time to see bhikkhus worthy of esteem. They are still in retreat. Suppose I went to Malika's park, to the wanderer Ugahamana, Sammana Mandika Putta. And he went to Malika's park. Now on that occasion, the wanderer Ugahamana was seated with a large assembly of wanderers who were making an uproar, loudly and noisily talking many kinds of pointless talk, such as talk of kings, robbers, ministers, armies, dangers, battles, food, drink, clothing, beds, garlands, perfumes, relatives, vehicles, villages, towns, cities, countries, women, heroes, streets, wells, the dead, trifles, the origin of the world, the origin of the sea, whether things are so or not so. The wanderer Ugahamana, Samana Mandika Putta, saw the carpenter Panchakanga coming in the distance. Seeing him, he quieted his own assembly thus, "Sirs, be quiet. Sirs, make no noise. Here comes the carpenter Panchakanga, a disciple of the recluse Gotama, one of the recluse Gotama's white-clothed lay disciples staying at Savati. These venerable ones like quiet. They are disciplined in quiet. They commend quiet. Perhaps if he finds our assembly a quiet one, he will think to join us." Then the wanderers became silent. The carpenter Panchakanga went to the wanderer Ugahamana and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side. The wanderer Ugahamana then said to him, "Carpenter, when a man possesses four qualities, I describe him as accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, attained to the supreme attainment, an ascetic invincible. What are the four? Here he does no evil bodily actions, he utters no evil speech, he has no evil intentions, and he does not make his living by any evil livelihood. When a man possesses these four qualities, I describe him as accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, attained to the supreme attainment, an ascetic invincible." Then the carpenter Panchakanga neither approved nor disapproved of the wanderer Ugahamana's words. Without doing either, he rose from his seat and went away, thinking, "I shall learn the meaning of this statement in the presence of the Blessed One." Then he went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he sat down at one side and reported to the Blessed One his entire conversation with the wanderer Ugahamana. Thereupon the Blessed One said, "If that were so, carpenter, then a young tender infant lying prone is accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, attained to the supreme attainment, an ascetic invincible, according to the wanderer Ugahamana's statement. For a young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion body. So how should he do an evil action beyond mere wriggling? A young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion speech. So how should he utter evil speech beyond mere whining? A young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion intention. So how should he have evil intentions beyond mere sulking? A young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion livelihood. So how should he make his living by evil livelihood beyond being suckled at his mother's breast? If that were so, carpenter, then a young tender infant lying prone is accomplished in what is wholesome, according to the wanderer Ugahamana's statement. When a man possesses four qualities, carpenter, I describe him not as accomplished in what is wholesome or perfected, in what is wholesome or attained to the supreme attainment or an ascetic invincible, but as one who stands in the same category as the young tender infant lying prone. What are the four? Here he does no evil bodily actions, he utters no evil speech, he has no evil intentions, and he does not make his living by any evil livelihood. When a man possesses these four qualities, I describe him not as accomplished, but as one who stands in the same category as the young tender infant lying prone. When a man possesses 10 qualities, carpenter, I describe him as accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, attained to the supreme attainment, an ascetic invincible. But first of all, I say, it must be understood thus. These are unwholesome habits, and thus unwholesome habits originate from this, and thus unwholesome habits cease without remainder here. And thus, one practicing in this way is practicing the way to the cessation of unwholesome habits. And I say it must be understood thus. These are wholesome habits, and thus wholesome habits originate from this, and thus wholesome habits cease without remainder here. And thus, one practicing in this way is practicing the way to the cessation of wholesome habits. And I say it must be understood thus. These are unwholesome intentions, and thus unwholesome intentions originate from this, and thus unwholesome intentions cease without remainder here. And thus, one practicing in this way is practicing the way to the cessation of unwholesome intentions. And I say it must be understood thus. These are wholesome intentions, and thus wholesome intentions originate from this, and thus wholesome intentions cease without remainder here, and thus one practicing in this way is practicing the way to the cessation of wholesome intentions. What are unwholesome habits? They are unwholesome bodily actions, unwholesome verbal actions, and evil livelihood. These are called unwholesome habits. And what do these unwholesome habits originate from? Their origin is stated, they should be said to originate from mind. What mind? Though mind is multiple, varied, and of different aspects, there is mind affected by lust, by hate, and by delusion. Unwholesome habits originate from this. And where do these unwholesome habits cease without remainder? Their cessation is stated. Here a bhikkhu abandons bodily misconduct and develops good bodily conduct. He abandons verbal misconduct and develops good verbal conduct. He abandons mental misconduct and develops good mental conduct. He abandons wrong livelihood and gains a living by right livelihood. It is here that unwholesome habits cease without remainder. And how practicing does he practice the way to the cessation of unwholesome habits? Here a bhikkhu awakens zeal for the non-arising of unarisen evil unwholesome states, and he makes effort, arouses energy, exerts his mind, and strives. He awakens zeal for the abandoning of arisen evil unwholesome states. He awakens zeal for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. He awakens zeal for the continuance, non-disappearance, strengthening, increase, and fulfillment by development of arisen wholesome states. And he makes effort, arouses energy, exerts his mind, and strives. One so practicing practices the way to the cessation of unwholesome habits. What are wholesome habits? They are wholesome bodily actions, wholesome verbal actions, and purification of livelihood. These are called wholesome habits. And what do these wholesome habits originate from? Their origin is stated. They should be said to originate from mind. What mind? Though mind is multiple, varied, and of different aspects, there is mind unaffected by lust, by hate, or by delusion. Wholesome habits originate from this. And where do these wholesome habits cease without remainder? Their cessation is stated. Here a bhikkhu is virtuous, but he does not identify with his virtue. And he understands as it actually is that deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom where these wholesome habits cease without remainder. And how practicing does he practice the way to the cessation of wholesome habits? Here a bhikkhu awakens zeal for the non-arising of unarisen evil unwholesome states. He awakens zeal for the abandoning of arisen evil unwholesome states. He awakens zeal for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. He awakens zeal for the continuance, non-disappearance, strengthening, increase, and fulfillment by development of arisen wholesome states. And he makes effort, arouses energy, exerts his mind, and strives. One so practicing practices the way to the cessation of wholesome habits. What are unwholesome intentions? They are the intention of sensual desire, the intention of ill will, the intention of cruelty. These are called unwholesome intentions. And what do these unwholesome intentions originate from? Their origin is stated. They should be said to originate from perception. What perception? Though perception is multiple, varied, and of different aspects, There is perception of sensual desire, perception of ill will, and perception of cruelty. Unwholesome intentions originate from this. Now, where do these unwholesome intentions cease without remainder? Their cessation is stated here, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, the bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained thought, with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. It is here that unwholesome intentions cease without remainder. And how practicing does he practice the way to the cessation of unwholesome intentions? Here a bhikkhu awakens zeal for the non-arising of unarisen evil unwholesome states. And through the others, forms of right effort. Awaken zeal for the continuance, non-disappearance, strengthening, increase, and fulfillment by development of arisen wholesome states. And he makes effort, arouses energy, exerts his mind, and strives. One so practicing practices the way to the cessation of unwholesome intentions. What are wholesome intentions? They are the intention of renunciation, the intention of non-ill will, and the intention of non-cruelty. These are called wholesome intentions. And what do these wholesome intentions originate from? Their origin is stated. They should be said to originate from perception. What perception? Though perception is multiple, varied, and of different aspects, there is perception of renunciation, perception of non-ill will, and perception of non-cruelty. Wholesome intentions originate from this. And where do these wholesome intentions cease without remainder? Their cessation is stated. Here, with the stilling of applied and sustained thought, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the second jhana, which has self-confidence and singleness of mind without applied and sustained thought, with rapture and pleasure born of concentration. It is here that these wholesome intentions cease without remainder. And how practicing does he practice the way to the cessation of wholesome intentions? Here a bhikkhu awakens zeal for the non-arising of unarisen evil unwholesome states, for the continuance, non-disappearance, strengthening, increase, and fulfillment by development of arisen wholesome states. And he makes effort, arouses energy, exerts his mind, and strives. One so practicing practices the way to the cessation of wholesome intentions. Now, carpenter, when a man possesses what 10 qualities do I describe him as accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, attained to the supreme attainment, an ascetic invincible? Here a bhikkhu possesses the right view of one beyond training. That's an Aseka 781. Aseka, one beyond training. An arahant. the right view of one beyond training, the right intention of one beyond training, the right speech of one beyond training, the right action of one beyond training, the right livelihood of one beyond training, the right effort of one beyond training, the right mindfulness of one beyond training, the right concentration of one beyond training, the right knowledge of one beyond training, and the right deliverance of one beyond training. When a man possesses these 10 qualities, I describe him as accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, attained to the supreme attainment, an ascetic invincible. That is what the Blessed One said. The carpenter Panchakanga was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. And that in sense of talking about where wholesome intentions cease without remainder, the commentary says that as far as the path of arahantship, he is said to be practicing for their cessation. When he has obtained the fruit of arahantship, they are said to have ceased. The virtuous intentions of the arahant are not described as wholesome. I don't know that they're not karmically potent in the same way. They're still considered a kusala. Maybe they're considered as unshakable or imperturbable. They don't bear the same fruit karmically, or they don't come back. Once arhats has attained nibbana, then it's no longer considered wholesome, because it's the goal to which it's set is already achieved.
It's still blameless.
Yeah, it's still blameless and conducive to good.
So would it be
I think that actually has another meaning. Abhyakata is more. I'm forgetting my my classifications here. It's good. It's a good thing. Kanga. Kanga. Pancha Kanga. Pancha Kanga. Five, I'm not sure. He comes up in several places through the canon. He's obviously a devoted lay disciple of the Buddha. I think I'll leave it there. It's a couple little shorter suttas to go through, and get into them. It'll take, it'll go off on a tangent. No.
ธรรมยังธรรมกถายะสังขารังสังขารัง